We are up to the fifth Mishnah in the first chapter of Pirkei Avos, the second of the first of the Zugos, the Peres, and we are today going to study the words of Yossi ben Yochanan, the man of Yerushalayim. And there's a very big difference between the town of Tzureda and the city of Jerusalem. Yesterday we talked about the town of Tzureda, Yossi ben Yoezer, who advocated that one's home should become a home of Talmidei Chachomim. And we talked about how the two zugos, the pairs, always reflect the discipline and the love. The Sor Meira, separating oneself from evil, and Aseh Tov, doing good. And as if you'll remember, we discussed how Yossi ben Yoezer maintained that one's home should be a home, should become the home of Talmidei Chachamim, where they are comfortable, and that is the essential home. We talked about the dangers of what a home may represent and how we can be lulled into a false sense of security in our home. And when we give over our home to its true owners, back to Hashem, then, in a sense, we're elevating the home. But that requires great discipline. And it requires an acknowledgement that what I have accumulated and what is my primary asset is really divinely given on loan. Now we're going to learn the words of Yossi ben Yochanan. And Jerusalem was an entirely different city than the rest of the land of Israel. Because as you know, in Jerusalem, three times a year, all the Jewish people would converge on Yerushalayim. Yerushalayim was not just a bustling metropolis, but rather it was the epitome of hachnasas orchim, of welcoming guests. Because can you imagine how many people actually lived in Yerushalayim, the Kohanim, those that serviced the Beis HaMikdash? Let's say you look at the old city of Jerusalem today. Today we've uncovered around Ir David, we've uncovered the actual original city of Jerusalem at the time of the first temple. Very small. It expanded a little bit, the city walls around the temple, not more than a square mile or a mile and a half. And how many people probably lived there in the temple times? Maybe 100,000. I think that would be very generous, but let's say 100,000 people lived in Jerusalem at the time. But every festival, millions of people, every single Jew, went up to Jerusalem three times a year. Where did they sleep? Where were the high-rise Hiltons and King David hotels and the plazas? They weren't. So where did these guys stay?
The street.
Everybody opened up their doors. And you know what? When you open up your door, there's room in your home for everyone. Believe it or not. Because space is only an entity when it's defined. But on a mother's lap, there's room for as many kids as there are. Because it's all embracing. Jerusalem was the mother's lap, and it was all embracing. And there was room for the millions of people that converged. And in fact, the Mishnah tells us later, and we're going to talk about this in greater detail down the road, but the Mishnah tells us that one of the greatest miracles in Jerusalem was that no man ever complained, "Sarli hamokam, the place is too constrained for me in Jerusalem." Fantabulous. It's fantastic when you think about it. Millions of people. On the festival of Sukkot, every seventh year, every single Jew came up to Jerusalem. Husband, wife, child, everyone. Millions of people. In its highlight, in its height, Israel had 15 to 20 million people, maybe much more. They all came up to Jerusalem, and they all fitted in, everybody. There's no running water in the houses. They didn't have faucets then. They didn't have toilets. They're bringing with animals, and the animals are making muck. The animals aren't angels. They're slaughtering those animals. Can you imagine? No garbage removal. Walking in the street must have been trying to push through a sweaty, smelly mess of perspiration. I can't imagine what it was like. And yet no one ever complained. There was room for everybody. Every Jew in Jerusalem waited for the festival to welcome everybody. Where did you sleep? You know what? when you're in ecstasy mode, you don't even need to sleep. That's the truth. They slept, the Talmud says, on one another's shoulders. They were in such an elated frame of mind. They were on such a high. They felt so close to Hashem. There's a most beautiful description in Rabbi Avraham ben Harambam, the son of the Rambam, great sage, who writes in his Sefer Hamaspik Le'ovdei Hashem what it looked like the day after the festival when the Jews were leaving and they had to go back to their fields and their workplaces all across the land of Israel, and they would stand at the Kotel Plaza right in front of the Har HaBayis and they would wail. They would cry copious tears that they're going back home, you know. Shabbos is over. It's back to the grindstone. It's such anticlimax. It's so hard. And they would try and take with the inspiration with them. But they were on a high. They were drugged with God in Jerusalem. But you know what happens? The house is open. Everybody's in an uninhibited spiritual frame of mind. Jerusalem was always the open city. It was the city where everybody was welcome. Anybody needed to bring a sacrifice through the year. Where did he go? He went to Jerusalem. Do you think Jerusalem had hotels? No. Every Jew's door was open. Sleep, come, eat. What's yours is mine. What's mine is yours. It was a fantastic scene. It's mind-boggling. But what are the dangers? Everything in life, every good thing, always has side effects. There are always dangers that we need to be aware of. Nothing is pure good. We can ingest the most powerful drug and tablet. There's always going to be some side effects. What are the side effects? What do we have to be aware of, be wary of under such circumstances? Well, one of the things that they needed to be particularly wary of was, you know, men and women intermingling the streets, everybody, there's no room to separate. You're in a home, in the street, everybody's mindful of their end destination. But in the home, what is liable to happen? We get chummy with one another. Can you imagine? It's one room, it's one sink, it's the same food. And what happens when we get chummy and very chummy and everybody's brushing against everybody else? Well, we're open emotionally and we unload a little bit, and that triggers connectivity. You know, whenever we speak to anybody, whenever we touch anybody's hand in an affectionate way, there's a Velcro effect. There's an automatic and instinctive connect on some emotional level. If I'm working at work in a cubicle and I've got my goals and objectives and my job to do, but I'm part of a team, and next to me is this pretty young girl, and as we are working together, of course, there's going to be common ground. It's exciting. The very fact that we're working on a project together is some form of connection of body and spirit, on a very mild level, of course. But there's nothing mild when it connects emotionally. Mild soon becomes wild. Very soon. And so, the sages set in place various safeguards to ensure that we are able to maintain a platonic relationship, that we're able to create a dichotomy between mind and body. And so they said, knowing human nature and knowing that men are animals and women are dumb, because they don't realize what animals men are, then, excuse me, therefore they put in place various safeguards to ensure that there is a healthy segregation of the sexes, that there are certain parking brakes in place to ensure that we don't go overboard. One of the parking brakes is a whole body of law called the laws of Yichud. We do not seclude ourselves in a house or in a car with a woman who we are not allowed to cohabit with, because if we're together, nobody got into bed with a woman without first transgressing the prohibition of yichud. The rabbis put in place a prohibition of yichud. We can't be, a man cannot be in an office with a secretary or a woman with the door locked where there isn't access to other people to walk in. Because we know human nature. And someone can say, well, if you don't trust yourself, what's the use of it all? The answer is, it's true. It's okay. We are honest, and we don't mind saying that we don't trust ourselves. As the sages say, ein apotropos la'arois. There is no guardian to immorality. Because we have real hormones. And that's good. We're supposed to harness them. We're supposed to maintain control. We're supposed to effectively, in the health and healthy parameters of a real relationship, we're able to allow them to be explosive, but they can only be explosive when they are separated from the rest of the world, when they're not diluted by everybody and everything. When our favors and our likings and our attentions are not drawn to a variety of women, thereby compromising the one who is really supposed to be the love of our life. And so the sages say, therefore, one should not socialize with emotional chatter with a woman. And that's the message of our Mishnah. We have to be able to talk business with other women and not get engaged in deep emotional talk, because emotional talk, a woman will unload, and a woman will talk her heart, and her heart touches my heart. And when hearts connect, there is a flow of energy and connectivity. And first it may start with just a little text messaging and a little thinking of one another. And before long, we're emailing every day and every hour. And before long, we're wining and dining together. And the rest is history. So the rabbi said, we've got to put some safeguards in place. And that's the message of this Mishnah. Yosi ben Yochanan, Ish Yerushalayim. Let's read the words. Yosi ben Yochanan. Don't worry, we're going to come to the end of the Mishnah. I'm not going to avoid the point. Yosi ben Yochanan, Ish Yerushalayim. Yosi ben Yochanan was the man of Jerusalem. He embodied Jerusalem. He made Yerushalayim famous. And he embodied the teachings, the hospitality, the love of Yerushalayim. And so he teaches, Yehi Beischa, let your house be Pasuach, wide open. Thank you. Be well. Pasuach, open, Lervacha, to the street. Lervacha is the wide open street, Revach, the space. In other words, there shouldn't be a portico or even a hook and eye on your door. People should feel totally comfortable walking in. Can you imagine that? Can you imagine that? Your door is open to the street, and anybody and everybody can feel absolutely comfortable coming in. Hey, I need a little privacy. I've got to have time out. I need my space. MySpace.com. Jerusalem, no such thing. They lived in tiny homes. Have you ever taken a tour around some of the digs near the Temple Mount? Actually, at the bottom there, you can actually go into Wilson's, to the water tunnels, the cisterns. They actually show you a house, the archaeological, the footings, and the outlay of a house from the first temple period. Big, thick walls. Tiny, tiny. The rooms were tiny. The way they cooked in a little oven inside. It must have been stifling hot. Tiny rooms. Everybody's there in Jerusalem. You have to give open access. No privacy. Nobody complained. Yehi Beischa, my house is pasuch levocha, it's open to the street. Everybody's welcome. And you know, when it's open to the street, one of the hardest things is an all-inclusive, hospitable process. We do not discriminate against men, women, minorities, lifestyles, different shvatim, different tribes. We don't judge people by the size of their yarmulke or the length of their socks. Everybody's welcome. We like to exercise hospitality, but selective hospitality. We don't want to bring certain people into our home, especially people that didn't take a shower for a week or two, or various undesirables, or people that we suspect may linger around for a longer time than we want. Real hospitality is open door, the whole spot. Everybody's welcome. And that is when the door is open to the street. There's no screening process. The door is open. Yehi beischa pasuach lirvacha. Wow. Your door has to be wide open. When it's wide open, what happens in the home when I come into the house? Everybody's welcome, even the poorest people. The yiyu aniyim, and the poor, normally poor people feel like they have the handout, they're second class, they're self-conscious. No, for yiyu aniyim, b'nei beischa, they should be members of your household, just like your children. Very famous, the stories of great Gedolim, Rav Chaim Briska, who was the greatest Torah sage. His door was so wide open, his kids rarely had a bed to sleep in. The Briska Rav used to say there were always people that slept in the house for months on end. Tiny little apartment. My home is totally open. Okay, it's Jerusalem. But what happens when the home is open and everybody feels totally at home? You know when we know who we really are? When we're at home. Because in the street and in the marketplace, we can feign being a gentleman. And we exercise civility and correct behavior. But at the home, all our guards are down. We are our real selves. And that's where our true person comes out. And so, in the home, there's always a danger. People drop their inhibitions. And men and women are welcome. There may be an intermingling of the sexes, which is unhealthy. How do we safeguard? Va'al tarbe sicha im ha'isha. Do not increase unnecessarily sicha, emotional talk, im ha'isha, with the woman. With the woman. And if you notice, it doesn't say Alta Basicha im Noshim, do not increase idle chatter with women. Sometimes it may be that we have to listen to a woman's idle chatter. In a professional setting, there are situations where it may be appropriate. But there's a woman in the back of my eye, in the back of my mind, Ha'isha. When I engage a woman in emotional talk, very often she's on my radar screen. Al tarbe sicha, do not increase deep talk, warm talk, im ha'isha. The woman. No, Rabbi, it's nothing. No, it's just, I have no interest. No, what are you talking about? Ha'isha. There is something that a woman gives that a man can never give. A person can have 100 friends, but a woman provides a stamp of validity, warmth, approval, security to a man that a man can never give. And the reason for that is simple. We're all one side of the coin. Adam was created with Eve together, with Chava together as one person, and then the Torah says Hashem took the feminine side of him, cut him in half, took it out, and brought it back to him. It was a tzela, it was a part of him that was removed and brought back to him, and now they had to be fused together through the challenge of marriage and real life. But nevertheless, it's part of him, as the Gemara uses a very interesting expression when it talks about the sexual drive of a man. It says, Adam machzir al avedase. A man is always looking for his lost part. There's a part of me that is not whole and not complete till marriage, till I am unified with a woman. And even though a woman can sometimes be pretty challenging, and we all know that in the back of our minds, and pretty demanding, kvetchy, draining, and all the rest of it. But this, we still go back to the well to drink. Because there is something about a woman that can provide internal security and warmth and excitement. And something, I don't even know what it is. Rabbi, I can't explain it. But I'll explain it. It's our other half. And Hashem wants us to be reconnected and refused with our other half in a very healthy way. It's a delicate form of stitching. It's called real marriage. There is what we call the instant connection, and there is what we call the real connection. There are, imagine, a complex computer system with hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of wires in one system. And then there is an opposite side, another very, very powerful system on the other side with hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of wires, and it takes years of painstaking effort to carefully connect and bond the appropriate wire, each one to the other, so that there should be a fused and combined flow of energy between these two supercomputers. But you know what? When they are within close proximity to each other, there is also an infrared capacity that they each have. And they each sense the huge power within the other, and there's a magnetic attraction to one another. And there's something very stimulating and exciting, just being in the presence of another girl and being the subject of her attentions and flirtations. There is that sense of incredible warmth and dual power of connectivity. Hashem doesn't want that. Hashem wants me to disconnect from that, because that can create a magnetic pull and bring all the wires banged together in one big mess. That's no good. The two supercomputers have to be separate and carefully and painstakingly, and it's years of marriage and life to connect each wire slowly but surely. And at the end of marriage, there's a huge, real, real power that's constantly building and building together. And each time, each stage in life, each anniversary, you look back, there's more wires that are connected. There's a greater understanding and appreciation. Do you know how we get that massive interconnectivity, that magnetic pull? Thank you. The magnetic pull, that instant attraction, that infrared connectivity comes because she's red hot. It's exciting. And there's something warm about it. But it's an instant gratification. And what happens when the body is stimulated? It doesn't really last. It's not real. It's saccharine. It's not good. Sicha, which means essentially an emotional connectivity without it being grounded in the head. Sicha is an overflow, an uncontained overflow. Siach in tefillah, sometimes it's appropriate to have siach tefillah. There's an overflow, there's just, I can't contain myself, Hashem, there's an outpouring. But when it is between a girl and a boy, or a man and another person's wife, it can be extremely unhealthy, because there's that infrared and magnetic connection of understanding and appreciation and intercommunication and intercourse of the mind, which can soon trickle down, very fast trickle down and flood the body. There are no safeguards. And so the first thing the Mishnah says is, Al tabe sicha im ha'isha. Do not increase emotional talk with the woman that you're there in the apartment with, that you're sharing with, the other person's wife. Unhealthy. Business. Healthy boundaries. Real respect. And then it says, Be'ishtei Amru. When we said the word Ha'isha, the woman, I mean even the woman of your life. Because in marriage too, to connect those wires very carefully and delicately, if I allow for a frivolous, exciting, totally open relationship where each of us can do whatever we want and give expression in the most excessive way to our wildest fantasies of the body, what happens is we lose a genuine respect for one another. It becomes, the other becomes the tool of our indulgences, And that doesn't build slowly, carefully, and painstakingly the wires that we can have a really powerful, interconnected, healthy relationship. Before long, it can easily dissolve. And if I allow for an unbridled, total, frivolous connection, ultimately, the marriage is not in a healthy place. It can dissolve. Now, that doesn't mean that there are times where it is appropriate to have an unbridled connection and a totally open and emotionally free connection, but everything needs boundaries. And if there are no boundaries in life, a relationship that has no boundaries will dissolve, because ultimately what happens? It spreads and spreads and spreads and pulls us down, down, down. We're only in a healthy place when we are going from the head to the body. But when we are flowing down upwards from the body up to the mind to the head, we're in a dangerous place. Each of us are supposed to be kings. You know the Hebrew word for a king?
Melech.
Melech. What is melech? How's that spelled? Does anybody know?
Mem,
lamed, chaf. Moch, a king is the head. Lev, lamed is the heart. Kaved is the liver, the seat of desire. But when we go the other way, what do we get? Destruction. Kalem, kaved. Kaved, lev, moch. Objectivity is flooded. Not in a good place. It feels good, but it only feels good for the moment. Long term, we know that we are denying our mission of, you know, what did this say with Coke? Live responsibly. You got to see it on the Coke bottle. And that's the message of the Mishnah. Live, but responsibly. But Ishtei Amru, even with a wife, there are healthy boundaries to the relationship. And so the Talmud talks in detail that at times of intimacy, it should not be incestual in its manner. It should be with sensible, meaning the Talmud says there should be a cultivation of minds beforehand, that they are on the same page and there's a real affection and a respect for one another. And so the Talmud says one shouldn't relate to a woman in an angry when there's anger in the room, or there's, it's just incestual, but not real. And that's the message of the Mishnah. Let's read the words inside. Be'ishtei amru. Even with one's own wife, that applies. Kal v'chomer, all the more so, be'eshes chavero, with the wife of my friend. Therefore, mikan amru chachomim, it was from here that the rabbi said, from these words of Yossi ben Yochanan, when he said that even with one's own wife, it's important that there are healthy parameters to the relationship, that there's a respect for one another's space and one another's needs. And yes, there are times where each one needs to give a very open, total expression of their feelings, but it is in a guarded way, it's in a timely fashion, it doesn't reflect the whole relationship. There are responsibilities that are at the seat of the real relationship to one another. And a total acceptance and embrace of the other person, even at times where they are not catering to their spouse's fantasies and physical expectations. And therefore, mikan amru chachamim, from here the rabbi said, kol hamarbe sicha im ha'esha, anybody who increases, marbe is from the word rove, that means there are no boundaries, they are constantly increasing. There are no boundaries to the sicha, to the idle chatter, to the emotional sexual talk, im ho'isha, with a woman, gorim ra la'asmo. They are bringing evil to themselves. That's not healthy. U'boitel, and ultimately they will neglect divrei Torah, the words of Torah, because it is the antithesis. Torah requires self-discipline, responsibility, boundaries, healthy parameters. For so far, and the end is when there are no boundaries in life, and we become all part of the Rainbow Coalition. And everything's good, and you're okay, and I'm okay, and everything's okay, just let me live. What it really leads to is a total self-indulgence of the self. You let me do what I want to do, and I'll let you do what you want to do, and when our paths happen to duly meet, and you service my needs, and I service you needs, your needs, we're going to have the greatest time together. That leads to Ganem. That is the pathway to hell. You are unwelcome aboard. That's the message of the Mishnah, guys. We still have a couple of minutes, and we open the floor to any questions that you may have on this Mishnah. If we can close the camera.
Was not good?